Here we are on this Tuesday afternoon, and welcome to the third half of the show. As I mentioned, at 3 o'clock, we have a couple of sterling guests dropping by today, some of my best friends in the information education business. That would be Lou Rockwell, who will be along in there about half an hour, and Jim Bovard, writer of such sterling works as Lost Rights, Freedom in Chains, Attention Deficit Democracy, and a whole bunch of other things that would eat up too much time to mention. But it came to my attention, and as I mentioned again at the top of the hour, there was a there were so many other things going on and different arrangements and so on. We couldn't get to it, and it was my fault that we went whizzing past August 22nd without taking the time to give due recognition and respect to the anniversary, the 20th anniversary actually, of the national embarrassment and scandal called Ruby Ridge. Back in that day, 1992, there was one person that I know of who was doing the heavy lifting on bringing information forward as to all that was entailed, but all the things that went on there. I don't think the internet was nearly as sophisticated then as it is today. But that was okay, because we had Jim Bovard writing articles for the Wall Street Journal and so on to put things in proper perspective. So with apologies to Randy and Vicki Weaver and to everyone else who followed that story and is concerned accordingly, ladies and gentlemen, author extraordinaire James Bovard. Hello,
hey,
Jim.
Brian. Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
You bet, you bet. I'm sorry, I'm about a week late on this, but...
Actually, it's not necessarily a week late, because the FBI had Weaver under siege for, I think, 10 days after they killed his wife. So
well, there was that, and of course they had him under surveillance for a lot longer than that prior.
Yes, very bizarre level of surveillance. They had the Pentagon in there. They were doing military surveillance flights. They were... They had a huge stack of photos that they took of people lined up to use the outhouse in the backyard. I mean, this is very important evidence of the Randy Weaver's danger to America.
Well, and that danger to America, the initial. To refresh everyone's memory, or maybe to inform people who weren't paying attention at the time, the charge was that he had. He had committed the heinous crime of failing to show for a court appearance.
This is a court appearance after which he had been sent the wrong date, and he was sent the court appearance because he was indicted because he'd been entrapped by an ATF undercover agent into selling him a couple of sawed-off shotguns. Weaver at first said no, but he was basically out of money. He had moved his family from Iowa up to this mountaintop in northern Idaho, close to the Canada border, because he basically just wanted to kind of get away from most of humanity. But he had made some comments the feds didn't like, so the feds targeted him and eventually swayed him to sell some shotguns. Weaver later said that he was very careful not to have those shotguns sawed off too closely. He thinks the informant sawed them off further after he sold it to him.
Yeah. That was another major part of that that whole story. But there was a piece of information that I got rereading your piece again, and especially that little tête-à-tête you had with Louis Free in the Wall Street Journal. And I think this is significant, is that Weaver was originally approached as part of an effort. To enlist people like him I want to put this in the correct terminology, in order for the government to essentially wage a war against conservative elements by inciting all sorts of various things from them. Can you flesh that out for me a little bit?
Well, yeah, he was targeted. He had gone to some meetings. Some folks were very hot-headed at those meetings. Some of them had some fairly nasty ideas. Some of them were, he was, I think, described as a white separatist.
Yes.
So, I mean, and writing about Ruby Ridge, I've been very careful not to kind of try to make him look like a model citizen, because he certainly was not. But he was typical of the kind of people that government initially targets in order to compel him to become an informant, this is the same thing which we've seen with peace movements. It's the same thing that we've seen with gun groups, militia groups, and others over the last 10, well, actually going back at least 15 years, because the government tries to find a few people on the fringe of those groups, and then tries to find some, you know, get some legal sword to hang over their head to compel them to do the government's dirty work and turn against everybody else.
The just to give the appropriate respect and you know, to Vicki Weaver and to the baby and to what happened there, again, for the for those of you whose memories have dimmed, federal agents came on to Randy Weaver's property, attempted to lure them out. There was an incident with a dog, and the dog was shot by a federal agent, and then Sammy Weaver was shot in the back by another
U.S. Marshal.
Noble U.S. Marshal. Yeah, I want to set up the award that the gentleman got for his fine work. And the and subsequently, as they ambushed Randy Weaver when he was out of the building, and when he was attempting to try to get back into their little hut there, that's when I believe it was Lon Horiuchi, a man who bragged about being able to put a 308 slug inside the diameter of a quarter from 200 meters, accidentally put a round through Vicki Weaver's head and killed her and the child and so on. So the all in all, maybe we ought to just since I hope most people remember this, and time is limited, Jim. The ultimately, what happened, the federal government finally got around to recognizing the individuals involved in this entire incident.
Well, yeah, it's a minor detail. The 10-month-old baby that Vicki Weaver was killing was holding was not killed. It was just, it basically blew her head off.
I didn't mean to imply that. Yes, the poor sentence structure on my part.
But it's interesting that the FBI snipers had come in and surrounded the Weavers, shanty, basically a shanty on the mountaintop. And they were hiding with camouflage 200 yards away. And as soon as and when Randy Weaver stepped out of the their shanty to go to a little shack nearby, he was shot in the back. And then as he was running back into the house, Vicki Weaver was standing near the doorway, and the sniper just took her head off. And there were the folks at the FBI initially claimed that killing her was justified, but they later said, "Oh, it was an accident."
But there was also, I believe you pointed out, there was subsequent material that discovered that written correspondence that indicated that if you can take out Vicki Weaver, there'd be nothing wrong with that, or words to that effect.
Right. That was a comment from Bo Greitz, who was a Vietnam War hero, who was there on the scene outside of, he was not in the cabin, but he was out there talking with the FBI and talking with Weaver. Greitz was the one who persuaded Weaver to finally surrender, but Greitz had seen the FBI profile, and the FBI profile was clear that Vicki Weaver should be taken out. So, and there was quite a bit of evidence that it was an intentional killing, but the FBI was able to cover that up fairly well for a few years, but then it kind of blew up in its face.
Yeah, the you wrote in the once again in the Wall Street Journal in 1996 that it was March the 1st, the U.S. Marshals Service gave its highest award for valor to the five U.S. Marshals involved in the Ruby Ridge shootout, including the marshal who fatally shot Sammy in the back, 14-year-old boy, and the marshal who started the whole thing by shooting the dog that was out trying to figure out what the hell the strange smell was coming from the woods. So it's nice to see that the government saves its highest awards for its most stellar performers.
Yeah, and it was typical that the Marshal Service waited until after the Senate hearings were done on this, because the several of the marshals had testified there before the Senate. Senator Specker actually did a good job of running the hearings, and had come up with all these ludicrous explanations that they never dared to offer at federal trial in Idaho 2 years earlier. And the senators almost laughed at them because they were just so totally lacking credibility. Yet, basically, as soon as those hearings were done, the Marshal Service was out there giving its highest award to valor and saying that these guys were heroes. And it was typical of how the government, the feds, were trying to rewrite history. It's the same thing that the FBI tried to do with the killing of Vicki Weaver. They were constantly putting out false facts. They were trying to claim that the FBI, that the shot that killed her had actually hit somebody else first, or some other guy the FBI agent was aiming for, and then the shot hit Vicki Weaver. Well, this is just completely false. But it was typical how the government tried to spin the story, and there were a lot of people in the news media who were such bootlickers that they would take whatever the FBI said and put in the paper or put on the news.
Yeah, I kind of suspected that bullet that they were talking about was similar to the same round that killed John Kennedy, but managed
yeah.
to
yes, you know, the magic bullet.
The magic yeah. bullet, yes. Yeah. It turns corners and goes at right angles and so on. By the way, you also mentioned in your response to Louis Free, which I'll get to in a moment, the 542-page Justice Department report that he had cited that he also claimed was a vindication of the FBI. Has that ever seen the light of day? Is that
yes.
subject to FOIA?
Yes. Well, FOIA, yeah.
Well, you know.
The Freedom of Information Act, yeah, that's something that I put a lot of faith in. That actually leaked out in mid 1995. I got access to a copy and wrote another story for the Wall Street Journal on that in, I think, June 30th, 1995. And it was amusing because Free had tried to vindicate himself with this report, but it was a very damning report to the FBI. It raised the question of cover-ups. It said it was that the people that did the report were stunned that the FBI snipers had tried to kill Weaver and did kill his wife and never gave any call out, never gave them the chance to surrender, even though that Weaver had never fired a shot at any government agent, and even though he was no threat at the time he was killed.
Yeah. The going back with respects to that report, that was mentioned in a letter by Louis Free, a letter to the Wall Street Journal in response to your initial piece. And I thought it was rather remarkable that throughout Louis Free's defensive letter, he kept citing, quote, facts, unquote, and other evidentiary material that had essentially been brought up and debunked in the trial that had already taken place. It was almost as if he had a stunt brain writing the piece for him, or he was just totally disconnected to the facts related to the case as it was heard in court.
Well, yeah, that's possible. It's also possible that the FBI just simply did not give a damn about the facts. That the FBI figured that it is so accustomed to receiving unlimited deference, and there's a large part of the news media which will accept anything the FBI says, and so the FBI was basically acting as if it had a prerogative to rewrite the facts on its killings. And looking at Louis Free's letter, that's exactly what he was trying to do. And it didn't matter that this and that and the other claim had been shot to pieces at federal trial, because the vast majority of people reading Louis Free's letter were not at that trial in Idaho and had not followed it closely. So here's the head of the FBI. Oh, okay, well, must have been the case.
Yeah, I'm sure the title carries with it its own veracity, or at least in the minds of some. The going back to that time for a moment, stepping back, looking back at the early 1990s, which is when I first met you and got acquainted with your work, Freedom and Chains, Lost Rights, and all the rest, and the articles you were writing on this. That whole time period seemed to be a pretty lousy time for freedom and liberty and so on. You had the Ruby Ridge business. You had the whole business with Waco, which was even more, if not the most heinous of acts that the government had perpetrated up until that time. Was there any sort of coordination between that? Is there any connection whatsoever, or was that just time and circumstance? And sucks to be a branch Davidian, or something like that.
Well, it was Larry Potts was, I think, the Larry Potts high up in the FBI was running the Idaho show indirectly from FBI headquarters. My understanding was he was also running the FBI headquarters guy for Waco. And Larry Potts was forced out in the mid-late 1990s after well, for numerous causes. I don't have the exact term here, and I'm getting an elbow in the rib from my libel lawyer here. But let's just say that Mr. Potts left the FBI with a very large dark cloud over his head. However, he never faced any legal liability for the actions or for the policies which led to the deaths in either Idaho or Texas.
Well, he may have left with a cloud, but my understanding is that that cloud doesn't exactly rain on his bank account.
No, there was, you and I were chatting yesterday on this, and as we were on the phone, I just glanced online, and Forbes.com mentioned that Potts is now getting roughly $1 million a year doing some kind of security-type work or whatever, consulting. And so, you know, it's just good he's not suffering too bad.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that. On the and just as another extension of something that we touched on yesterday, also, is there were these, in your learned opinion, and I didn't say that with any sarcasm. You've been hauling this water for a long time. Is there? Is it just
shoveling might be a better term, but that's okay.
I guess it depends. Are you on the receiving end or whatever? But the what I'm trying to get to is the connection, if any, between Ruby Ridge and Waco, and now some of the glories that we have to contend with in the form of the National Defense Authorization Act and the continuing tightening down loss of rights, if you will, for American citizens at the hands of the government. I mean, it was just a softening up process, shock and awe, or what?
I don't think it was planned out in that sense. But there were so many cases in the 1990s which showed the federal government could do horrendous things and get away with it, because it was very rare for an FBI official or other top government official to be held liable for violating the rights or liberties of the American people. And the those were lessons that were taken to heart, especially after 9/11. And you've had a vast expansion of federal power under both Clinton, Bush, and Obama, three of a kind. And there has been very little pushback. And there's also been very little pushback or digging by most of the American media on this stuff.
Well, you certainly wouldn't anticipate anything to the contrary. I'd like to quote you from a piece I read. The totality of government oppression is far greater than the apparent sum of its parts, because most people are unaware of the vast majority of government abuses. They greatly underestimate the perils to their rights and liberties, quote unquote, James Bovard, which I think sums up this discussion and the whole concept of that aspect of our examination of the fruits of the federal government.
I'm glad you like that. I'm glad you like that quote. I wasn't sure if it worked, but since it worked for you, it works.
It'll be on our famous quote game shortly. We want to make sure everybody's taking notes. But that is it's very insightful and very very on target. One of the reasons that people are suffering from contagious apathy is because they are just totally they're clueless and unaware, and that is largely due to the services of the mainstream media and the fact that they haven't seized the opportunity to read. And I say this without any reservation. If people had read Lost Rights, if they had read Freedom in Chains, they had kept up with the work that you had done over the years to provide a factual record against the philosophical background, then the attitude of the country and the voter might be entirely different than the suck-up entitlement notions that the 48% of them are currently practicing. But that's just me.
Well, yeah, and even better, something like that would have helped book sales.
Well, there's that, but then you'd probably be looking for a movie, and, you know, contact.
You know, that's far beyond my fantasy life.
Well, listen, I thank you always, as usual, for your time and for your effort and your information and your perspective and all the things you bring to the table. They do great work for people who take the time to consume them, and I look forward to whatever it is you got coming out next, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks for your kind words, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Great having you aboard, Jim. Jim Bovard, and you can go to Jim's blog, where he writes about this stuff on a fairly regular basis. It's you can just Google Jim Bovard, and it'll take you to there.